Accession number 28879, reel 14.
Afterwards, you know, but
what did you feel about them?
Well, I didn't think much
of
them.
It was quite hard, I would have thought. That,
some of them, yeah, especially after that guard tent episode, when they fired in the guard tent. But those I met at the Troon, where they were, the Red Caps had them, you know.
Mm.
They were pretty vicious lot, all the other. You know?
Yeah.
And one of the Red Caps described them, he said, they're nothing but a lot of rabble from the continent, he said. And you know what it was like on the continent, soldiers everywhere,
yeah,
ex-prisoners, all sorts running around,
yeah,
German deserters and everything.
Russians.
And they all gravitated to Palestine to join the terrorists there and the different groups.
Mm.
And the main terrorist group was the Sturm Gang and the Irgun Vaid of Me. They were the main terrorists there. They had the vicious one, but the Haganah was constituted mostly of the more or less regular army that the Jews had at that time.
Right.
They were soldiers, you know, but they were still against the British being there. And they made life uncomfortable, but they weren't strictly terrorists.
Mm.
But the real terrorists, and those that harboured the real terrorists, the vicious ones, were the Irgun Vaid of Me and the Sturm Gang, as they called them. They were a bad lot.
Yeah. So was it quite...
Did you hear about them at all?
Only a little.
Well, they were a vicious lot, all the other. In fact, they treated some of the Jews badly in the kibbutz, you know.
Mm.
Because they had to have hiding places for their weapons and their men, and they were a bit rough on some of the Jews in the kibbutz.
So did they get roughed up as a little bit if the British got hold of them?
Yeah, they did, because... although they wouldn't tell on them, of course. One place, one kibbutz we went to... One of the officers was a bit suspicious about the kitchen. He was very suspicious about it, you know, and he said, we'll make a thorough search of this one. But we went into the kitchen, and we dragged out the stoves, the big stove, and underneath was a big iron grill or platform, and underneath was the arms. There was rifles and all sorts there. He got praised quite a bit for that. But I don't know what made him suspicious, but that's what went on at various times in the kibbutz, you know.
Yeah. They
were terrorised by the terrorists. And
it was quite tense, was it?
It was at times, yeah. You didn't know what you were doing, you know. Now and again, a soldier would get shot.
Yeah.
Or someone would get shot, you know. One time, I think it was in Tel Aviv, I forget, one of the Scots regiments, they went through it and they found a girl and a man hidden, and they were armed.
Right.
In behind the shop at Woolworths, I think it was Woolworths, yeah. They had a Woolworths there. Anyway, they had them out and lined them up, and one of these girls out with a pistol and shot one of them.
Right.
One of the soldiers. Of course, that created a sensation as well. And they didn't trust women even after that, but they could be just as bad anyway, couldn't they?
Yeah. So did the troops, there must have been quite a bit of anger about them at the Jews, was there?
Yes, they didn't like the Jews at all, no, there's no doubt about that. A lot of the Jews were quite good people, you know, and they were friendly to talk to and all sorts, and they'd bite you for a cup of tea and that sort of thing, although you had to be careful, you know, and they never commit themselves. But they took a chance anyway by inviting us in, you know, especially if you had the red beret on as well.
Why? The paratroops were particularly...
The paratroops came in for it worse, you know, they got worse treated than all.
Right. Why was that?
Well, they were a bit rough, you know, well, they were supposed to be. They didn't go for kid blood treatment or anything like that, you know.
No.
They were pretty rough all the time. They didn't like them.
Right. So what did you think of the parachute regiment after you...
Oh, they were. There's nothing wrong with them. They're ordinary chaps, you know.
Yeah.
But...
Well, they were quite a rummy bunch, right?
There was one time there when the 16th Independent Parachute Regiment was coming up. It came home from the Far East. They were sent there. They were all young men, youngsters, you know.
Yeah.
All been specially trained, volunteer for the parachuters, did their parachute training course, then were sent off to Japan, or sent far east, got as far as India, and it came to an end. So they're young men, frustrated young men, they've been trained for war, for killing, and they got nowhere, and they more or less ran amok at times, they got fed up, and whether it was a mutiny, or whether it was just a huge row, which was finally controlled, I don't know, but they were split up, and sent home. But some of them were sent to Palestine. But there was nothing wrong with them at all, you know. That was the only time there was ever any suggestion of what they call it now, mutiny among the parachutists. But that was understandable, really, wasn't it?
Did you hear of any other mutinies during the war?
No, there was one of the regiments here was supposed to have panicked when they thought there was a gas attack. But I don't know what came of that. It was true enough, you know. They did think it was a gas, and they panicked because at that time all gas masks had been dropped.
Yeah.
In fact, at Cabrit there, this was in the early days, of course, before they had the proper scuba outfits and things like that.
Yeah.
We're trying ways to stay underwater longer in order to approach the ship to put the limpet mines on.
Right.
We did the training Alexander Arbor. And you had to be a good swimmer to stay under long enough to do it.
Mm.
And we got one of the gas masks and cut the tubes off the other. That shows how what we thought of them then. Gas was out altogether, didn't it?
Yeah.
Joined the tubes up, put it on a little floating platform, put the mask on, and you could go 3 feet under and swim along.
Right.
But the trouble was that beyond 2 or 3 feet, you couldn't breathe because the water pressure pressed the goggles up and against your face and you couldn't breathe hardly. So you had to stay about 2 feet, so we had to discard it eventually.
Right.
But it worked for a while, so it shows you what we were doing at the time, you know, to improve things.
Yeah.
But later on, they had the proper outfits, you know.
But it was over for you, but this is while you were a prisoner, all the best kit came, didn't it?
True enough, yeah. All developments came then. It started in England.
Yeah.
But the boat section had come to England by then.
So what?
The Marines had taken over once.
What developments did you notice? Was you 3 years of warfare?
Ballast tanks on the canoes.
Yeah.
You know, all along the side. Well, before we used to use our Mae West, not to put on, but to put in the front of the boat to stop it sinking, you know, and stabilise it for the loads.
What about vehicles? The Willis Jeep was quite a...
Pardon?
The Willis Jeep was quite a...
The chutes?
No, the American Jeep.
Oh, the Jeeps?
Did that make a big difference?
I think it was the vehicle that dominated the whole war, the American Jeep.
Yeah.
Everyone had them, you know. When they first arrived at Cabrit with the SAS, that was before when they went on the big Jeep raids.
Yeah.
Well, I was out of it then. But I remember the Jeeps coming in, and one of the officers, the rumour was that they were marvellous things. They could do 40 or 50 miles an hour, and they could take bends at 30 or 40 and that sort of thing.
Right.
A couple of them officers went off mad, you know, and this lieutenant just killed himself. He went speeding along the road, went around bend, or hit the sand or something and turned over, and we had to bury him. I went to his funeral at Suez.
Right.
That was the only one I knew who killed in an accident, but there were a lot of accidents as well.
Yeah.
Because they taught us to drive as well.
Who did?
Yes. It was unofficial.
Right.
Normally, if you took your course, you went by the driving instructor from the motor school there, and for about 4 or 5 weeks, and you had your little pink certificate so you could drive, and you could take that home and exchange it.
For a driving license,
yeah. I never went in for it. This friend of mine there took me out in the Jeep a couple of times, and we drove up to Ismailia and different places.
Is this the first time you've driven then, I suppose?
Driven, first time I've driven, yeah.
Because don't forget, before. I mean, when I grew up, we all learned to drive, but in your day, cars weren't so common. Before the war, You wouldn't have had the chance, would you?
World War, I had a friend who bought a little Ford Baby Austin. Baby Austin. And they used to take me out, but I never drove at all.
Right.
I used to go out and...
So the first vehicle you drove was the Willow Street, was it? The American Jeep?
Yeah, the Jeep, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that, I drove a 1500 weight as well, just to keep you in practice, you know, with the...
Yeah.
This is when I was, when you were idling around waiting for things. Right. And so many things to remember that happened there.
But when you didn't have an awful lot of formal training, did you? I mean, you did with the commandos, with the Devonshires and then the commandos.
But the other was just...
The SBS, you sort of, and the SS.
We had a bit of instruction from Courtney about the boats, you know, and what they could do. He told us about his own experiences and how to be careful with them and how to handle them with... on the beach, for example, you'd think the best way to come up was nose first onto the beach, but that would damage the canoe anyway.
Right.
So in normal waters, we came in broadway, and then one of us stepped out, and then gradually drew the boat in sideways. So,
yeah.
So it just rolled with the swell, you see.
Uh-huh.
Whereas the other way, it's liable to break. But when...
And you didn't do the full SAS course?
Pardon?
You didn't do the full...
No, I only did three jumps at all.
Right.
So, that went.
What did you think of that?
Well, the first two was after, just before the, I can't remember now. I can't remember at all now which one it was, but it was there was a special name for it, Valencia, I think it was.
Hmm. And this is when you first went from the SBS to the SAS, then you had to do the jumps, did you?
No, this was just before this was, because we were doing exchanging training, you see.
Right.
The SAS was... with the training with the full boats, they're coming out with us,
uh-huh.
And we were going training with the SAS, and the Sutherland, I believe Sutherland said, we could take a parachute jump if we wanted to, a parachute jump. It was the Bombay?
Yeah.
In Valencia it was, that's right, in Valencia. Uh-huh. It was the jumping from the side of the door,
right.
up near the pilot's cabin. So it was in Valencia, yeah. And there were also at the same time some Iranian girls from Iran, from the Iranian army.
Uh-huh.
They were coming to learn the parachute jump, to do one jump at it, uh-huh. To train, and they were going back to Iran, and they were going to land somewhere in Turkey or Russia or somewhere like that, as agents, like the SOS, SOA, yeah. That reminds me, one of what we got to that. This is a little echo from the past here. You know, I was known as Billy Moss all the time.
Yeah.
To the Fiamma and the girls there. This, have you read this book at all?
No.
Captain Crowley's Mandolin.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I've heard of it, but I've never read it.
Well, this is a Fiamma sent this to me. I'll tell you why in a minute. It just says... recording times past but never forgotten to dear Billy with a Fiamma. And this is what struck her. It was about the Italian captain in Greece, Cephalonia, with the Italians there. And when the Italians packed in, surrendered, the Germans were on the island, took over.
Yeah.
And that's what it was about. It was pretty fierce at the time. But this is the fellow there. Sitting a bit of history, and it's all about the what the SBS did in the Dodecanese and around there.
Uh-huh.
And here it comes to he was saying what they'd been doing, see, what they've all done. Raiders killed commanders at Seeley, and because that was the SBS. And Patrick Lee Firmer and Billy Moss abducted the commander of Crete. Remember when they captured that general?
Yes.
And the SOE officer was called William Moss, William Stanley Moss. And he was known as Billy Moss. But when she saw that, she knew I'd been in the Dodecanese and everything else. She probably thought it was me or something like
that. Right.
It's a coincidence, isn't it?
Did you tell her?
I was the only other for the most in there, yeah. Okay, yeah. All she knows about it now, yeah. This is on
what a coincidence, though.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Mm.
That's fantastic.
But it's surprising here that in the book, it's supposed to be a novel.
Yeah.
But
they made a film of it as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they made a film of it as well. In Cephalonia, on the Ionian side, you know, the right. Of Greece.
Hi.
It's surprising that they mentioned all the SBS and the Air Force did. They harried the Germans and the Deccanese everywhere.
Mm.
But because the Allies landed in Italy, in Sicily, and went to Italy, they ignored Greece, and of course the Greek went into chaos. The partisans took over, and the civil war and all stuff, wasn't it? And it affected everybody.
Churchill was all for military action at the end of the war, to stop the communists taking over. Yeah.
But they already had done.
Yeah.
In fact, they were taken over when we were prisoners. In fact, we were going to go up through Greece to Germany. Instead of that, because of the partisan activity, we were sent to Italy. So.
Did you know, what did you think of communism? Did you have any idea?
No, I didn't think much of it. All we knew was that the Greek communists were pretty rough on the Greeks themselves, you know. And I do know that at that time, or just after, that the admiration for the Russians was going down quite a bit, you know, because we thought communist guerrillas were reflecting the Russian attitude as well, you know.
Yeah.
But we didn't think much of it, you know.
So about when was this?
It was just another fascism, wasn't it, then?
Stalin's communism, So when was that? When did that attitude start to change?
Pardon?
When did that attitude towards the Russians start to change because of the communists?
Just after the civil war in Greece.
Right.
And they heard all about the atrocities they were creating, and the comment. I think there must have been three or four different types of partisans, didn't there?
Yeah.
All their different names, EOS, SES, or OU.
Yeah.
They could have named them, didn't they? But,
it was the same in Yugoslavia.
But the communists were the most brutal, I think, towards the Greek civilians, and that's what did it.
Mm.
And then seeing the communists in Italy as well coming down through, they were pretty rough. They had no consideration for anybody, you know.
No.
They didn't have a. In fact, that's why Paddy and I left them anyway. We didn't think much of them, you know.
Right.
And then it's difficult to tell one from the other at that time.
Yeah.
But we've still gone off, and I don't know where you want me to.
It's all right, Bill. I've been off track tonight because I've on my way to see my mum's just come out of hospital, so I'm on my way to see my mum. Yeah.
Oh, well, don't go overdoing it, you know. No. I mean, there's plenty of time, and if you can sort it out later on. Or
What I've listened to, Bill, it does jump about a bit, but what I've started to do is just type it out. But it's going to take me a little while, and then I'll. I will put it all together.
I wish I could take it down, but I'm
not. No, it's all right, Bill, because we keep coming back to things. And, but every time we talk, I know it seems like we talk about the same thing over and over again, but little by little it'll build up into a big picture.
Things I can remember too when you're not here, but.
That's it, and then it comes back to you, and we've probably covered all the war. What we're going to start on next week.
I enjoy doing it, you know, I like.
So do I, Bill. No, it's a privilege to come and see you once a week, it really is. But we've probably covered most of the war. We've talked about all sorts of things, haven't we?
Thanks for that.
We've talked about all sorts of things, haven't we? So what we'll start talking about is what happened to you when you came home.
Yes, well, that's...
Next week we will talk about what happened when you came home.
It was...
Because you'd be 8 years, weren't you? You were 8 years in uniform.
I was doing painting and decorating apprentice. Or just
before the war, weren't you? Yeah.
Pop wanted to start up a business, you know.
With you?
Painting and decorating, didn't it?
Moss and Sons.
Well, I had the gratuity, you know, it was about £120 or so. And then there was the accumulation of the prisoner of war pay as well, that went.
That's quite a lot of money, isn't it?
Well, it seems so. It wasn't much more than about £200 to £300, that was all. When you work out of the wages for 9 months, around about £4 a week, something like that. Doesn't mount up much, does it?
No.
There was a lot of money at the time, you know, because quite a lot.
We'll talk about that next week. Was it a shock when you came home?
Then I used to send a remittance home to my wife as well, to my mother.
Out of your army pay?
Out of army pay, yeah. I used to spend about £1.10, I think, like that. That doesn't sound a lot, but...
That's about half your pay, though, isn't it?
Well, no, that towards the end...
Oh, I see, when you're up to about £5.
I getting more money then, about £5, £6 a week then, see. I sent that off, and of course, she always saved it up anyways.
Did she?
So...
Mm. All right.
All right, Nelly? Well, you want to go outside?